Welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM. You're the Cure, of course, brought to you by Veritas Medical, Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. For past archive programs and other important information to help you regain control of your health, check out that website, veritasmedical.com. Lots of good information there, and again, archived shows as well. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Wade.
How are you today?
Doing really good. Yourself?
Yeah, doing good. Doing good. Good to see you back. So got a great show once again lined up. What are we going to be talking about today?
Well, as much as I'd like to move on to some other topics.
Really?
This COVID-19 thing, it just keeps rearing its ugly head.
Mm-hmm.
And we're here to help try to bring the truth to the situation, as we've talked about before. And I've got to thank you again, Wade, for being an independent media outlet. Not one
of the rare ones.
Not selling out to, I think you said it's six companies that own 90%+ of all the media in the U.S.
Yeah, I think it's
US.
Five, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways, thank you for being here as an independent source of being able to get some truth out. So that's what we're going to talk about today is what's the truth. We've got a great guest, Dr. Richard Bartlett, who's been speaking the truth for many, many months, or probably even a year now. I can't believe I'm saying this. It's a year and we're still talking about this. So we're going to talk about early outpatient treatment that's effective. We're going to talk about vaccine failure. We're going to talk about who's really in the hospital, vaccinated versus unvaccinated. Maybe we'll get into some other things too. Whatever our fine guest wants to talk about also, of course, Dr. Richard Bartlett, welcome to the show.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, Texas.
Dr. Bartlett, please introduce yourself, if you don't mind, and give a brief kind of intro to our audience of who you are. I think a lot of people recognize that name. I know Wade, when I said it this morning, immediately recognized it. You kind of made a name for yourself. I mean, you've had a name for yourself for a long time in the state of Texas, working with Governor Perry, which I'll let you tell listeners about, but then last year with the budesonide discovery. So just a quick little bio for the listeners.
Okay. So I've been practicing medicine in Texas for 30 years. For 7 years, I was an advisor to Governor Rick Perry on the Health Disparities Task Force. And as a result of those 7 years of service, I was surprised to receive the Meritorious Service Award from the Texas Health and Human Services Commissioner, and have served on many boards and committees for the Texas Medical Association. I've been a four-term president for the County Medical Society, chosen by my peers. And so I've had positions of influence, and people have valued my opinion, and we've done a lot of good things. But when the pandemic struck, there was a lack of any attention from Fauci, from the CDC, from the Texas Department of Health on early treatment, and for the first year, basically, on all the websites, it would say, if you're sick, just stay home and tough it out with Tylenol and wait until you have these following signs to go seek help. Your lips turn blue, you can't think clearly, you're short of breath. That doesn't sound like the time you should tell someone to get behind the wheel and go to the emergency room with a life-threatening condition. Yet that was what was the standard of care. And there was a big void of early treatment offered. But in March of last year, 3 months into the pandemic, our President Trump suggested a treatment strategy. And I want to let everyone know that there's a gentleman named Dr. Zev Zelenko who had the courage to not stand back and stand down when his patients were dying of COVID. And instead, he chose to treat them and to use his good judgment, lean on his medical training and experience, and do what made sense. It was intuitive, based on past research that already suggested and supported what he was saying about hydroxychloroquine and zinc and a Z-Pack, and those were the things that were initially suggested, and the president said that in March, and then Fauci shot it down. And so on the heels of that, a strategy came to me, and it proved very successful. using inhaled budesonide, an inhaled steroid that's readily available. It's at every pharmacy on every corner in the United States. It's in India. It's all over the world, readily available, generic, which makes it inexpensive. No one's going to get rich off of this medicine. Even if you paid cash, it's $3 a treatment to use the medicine in a nebulizer machine. And that wasn't the only tool I was using, but that was really the cornerstone of my treatment protocol. That and an antibiotic called clarithromycin and aspirin and zinc. And we were having people live and not die. And when I had an interview go viral, 5 million views in 2 weeks, YouTube pulled it saying it was dangerous. I suggest it was dangerous to the virus because I had patients that had, like a 400-pound gentleman who, obese, minority, has stage 4 prostate cancer that spread all over his body on chemotherapy, needs help getting into the car so he can go to his chemo, and he gets COVID. He beat COVID. He was treated and beat COVID, but 8 months later he died from the cancer, succumbed to that. And so if he can live, then other people can live. And so the narrative that was pushed in the mainstream media that if you have comorbidities, if you're a minority, if you're obese, you're a goner, was not what I was experiencing with my patients. My patients were living and not dying. And other doctors like yourself, like Ben Marble in Florida, who was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize this year, and other doctors were treating patients instead of watching them get sicker and waiting till they need to be in the hospital. At the beginning, they were pushing ventilators, like that was the answer. And you know how that went. Initially, 90% of the people on ventilators were dying with COVID, initially. Then they got it down to 80%. It's still late care, and it's a focus on late care. And we don't do late care treatment for cancer, for heart disease, for stroke. As a matter of fact, our greatest gains in survival and benefits to morbidity and mortality have been early treatment in all of those diseases. And so this is so nonsensical to focus on late care only with this disease that's a killer. For many people.
Yeah. I had an email late last week from a lady in California. I think she listens to this show. And her email basically said, I'm healthy. My diet and lifestyle is good. I'm not too worried. But with the news media propagating so much fear over this Delta variant, unvaccinated people are, spreading all this COVID, I'm still considering getting the shot because I can't find a doctor who will follow the protocol that the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons, aapsonline.org, y'all can go find that protocol for outpatient treatment. She can't find a doctor that'll do it. She called Kaiser Permanente and said, "What do you do for outpatient treatment?" And their answer was nothing. According to her email that she sent me, I don't know why she'd be lying. So her plan was to send them the protocol and see if they would be willing to do that. I'm still waiting to hear back what their answer is. But Kaiser Permanente, still 18 months into this, and the data is overwhelming. We had Dr. McCullough on a couple weeks ago. I mean, his study he published was August of last year on the outpatient treatment that reduces mortality and hospitalization by 85%.
Okay, so you sound like you're wanting to talk about science and facts now. So
we try to keep it to that.
So I'm going to say, if anyone's a listener and they have the ability to write something down, write down STOIC trial, STOIC. That's a randomized controlled trial done by Oxford University, the oldest university in the English-speaking world since 1096. Oxford University that has 72 Nobel Prize laureates. Oxford University did the STOIC trial, a randomized controlled trial, using one medicine, budesonide, inhaled budesonide, against one disease, COVID. And they had to stop the study because of the overwhelming evidence that budesonide can decrease hospitalizations, ER visits, and even urgent care visits for COVID if they're treated early. Just that one medicine against that disease. And so they had to stop it early because they said it was unethical to continue the study. And the patients that were in the study on a placebo risked hospitalization and death from a disease that they have found an effective treatment for. And so I think that's significant. That came out last year. Then they also did the principal trial, Oxford University, the principal trial with elderly people being treated with inhaled budesonide against COVID, and they had, again, overwhelming evidence that it was effective. But why do people go in the hospital if they have COVID? Because they're having trouble breathing. And as doctors, we do advanced cardiac life support. We do advanced trauma life support. The basic principles are, airway, breathing, circulation, stabilize the patient. I do emergency room work. We stabilize our patients. We do supportive care for respiratory infections. That's how we make it through every viral pandemic so far, is giving supportive care. And so the problem that puts people in the hospital with COVID is acute respiratory distress syndrome, triggered by a virus that's very, very common for people to go in the hospital and have acute respiratory distress syndrome if they have an overwhelming viral infection, respiratory viral infection. And so there's an article at the NIH database, so NIH vetted it, and it was published in 2017, prior to the pandemic. The article is about the effect of nebulized budesonide for patients that have ARDS, acute respiratory distress syndrome, or acute lung injury. And they found four findings in their case study. They found that nebulized budesonide improves the oxygenation, which is why people are in the hospital. Their oxygen gets low. It reverses the swelling or edema in the lung tissue. It stops the remodeling and scarring in the lungs. And it makes the cytokines drop to zero, the release of the cytokines, the poisons that cause that drive the disease process. All four of those are important. And so what happens when you do that? The patients recover. These were patients that were on ventilators in that study, and that's late disease. And so budesonide will help COVID patients with early care, early treatment. That was proven by Oxford University in the STOIC trial, the principal trial, but nebulized budesonide will help patients on ventilators in the ICU with ARDS. And that's found at the NIH database, and that study came out right before the pandemic in 2017, and it's published in the Saudi Journal of Anesthesia. There's also a Saudi Journal of Critical Care study about the same time that showed that people who were difficult to wean from the ventilator can be weaned quicker with nebulized budesonide. I think that's significant. And why hasn't that been in the mainstream media? I think we all know at this point that when President Trump coined the phrase fake news, that there's some validity to that. That there seems to be a great deal of propaganda, a great deal of marketing. And I was talking to my father, who's a doctor, and he said they're selling the vaccines like they're selling soap. I said, well, I'll buy soap for $100 if they'll give me $100. The idea of giving someone $100 to get a shot is just crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll definitely get into the vaccine. And the breakthrough cases and half the hospitalized cases seem to be in the vaccinated. We'll get into that after the break here in a minute. I just want to encourage the listeners, everything Dr. Bartlett just said, these studies he's quoting and the remarkable percentage of improvement, 90%, that's just with budesonide, this inhaled steroid. I'm looking at HCQMeta.com. That stands for hydroxychloroquine. HCQMeta, M-E-T-A.com. Go check it out yourself. 273 studies on hydroxychloroquine. 30 of these studies are in early treatment. phase, 100% of the early treatment studies report a positive effect to the tune of a 65% improvement. That's just hydroxychloroquine. Then go to IV, as in Victor, M as in mother, IVM for ivermectin, IVMmeta.com, M-E-T-A, 61 studies on ivermectin alone by itself. And this is broken into prophylactic, early treatment, late treatment. 61 studies, guys, that's a lot of studies. And then you throw the budesonide in. So imagine if you combined all three. And doctors are combining all three. So I'm just trying to point out, guys, the evidence here is just overwhelming. And I think the disconnect, probably not for our listeners, they've been tuned in and understand, but for, you know, family members of our listeners, for, you know, just the general public that's consuming information from conventional mainstream sources, you're not going to see any of this. And I guess we're going to have to get Dr. Bartlett's opinion on the why there. But I just want to encourage people, be at peace. There's this early treatment works. Dr. McCullough, 2 weeks ago, was explaining 85% reduction in hospitalization and death from doing these combination therapies early on. So, Dr. Bartlett, can you speak to or talk about in your clinical experience combining any of these therapies? Have you seen cases where this didn't work? You know, obviously it's not going to be 100% of the time. There's some very at-risk people, unfortunately. There's people with chronic disease. There's elderly folks that succumb to respiratory viruses every year. But you, as an ER physician,
I'll give you some feedback, some real examples. A patient who has 5 days where she can't get out of bed. She has a nonstop fever, and she's overweight. She's fighting two forms of blood cancer, lymphoma, on chemotherapy, received radiation for the lymphoma a month before, and she has COVID, so weak she can't get out of bed. Fever will not break for 5 days, can't sleep for 5 days because she's so miserable. And when she starts the nebulizer treatments, the budesonide, the first treatment breaks her fever. She sleeps for the first time in 5 nights, recovers over the weekend, is able to teach her music students during an 8-hour workday via Skype on Monday, and she recovered from COVID. She was so excited that she called the local news affiliates and put a press conference together at her little music academy in Odessa and invited me as a guest to her press conference because she was so excited to be alive. That was 8 months ago. How about a lady with a 50-year history of smoking in her 70s, 5 days of shortness of breath, chest tightness, had four-vessel bypass surgery for heart disease, a four-vessel CABG. She's a heart patient with high blood pressure on medicines for high blood pressure and thyroid disease. With her first nebulizer treatment of budesonide, she tells me, my chest tightness went away, my shortness of breath went away with the first treatment. You know, over and over again, a 95-year-old lady treated at home with the outpatient treatment, beat COVID about 8 months ago. I have some ridiculously good reports. How about a patient that is in the hospital on oxygen, 100% oxygen, in the ICU in Odessa, Texas, on the ventilator? The pressure is, the PEEP is 16. That's the pressure that the lungs are being pounded with each breath. And her oxygen saturation is only 80% with all that help. The husband is at home fighting COVID, and he receives 3 calls from the doctors asking for hospice orders to let the patient die. He tells the hospital doctors, I can't do that. My wife made me promise to do all we could to keep her alive so she'd be here for our children. He reports that they told him that they'll get a court order from the judge and they'll pull the plug on his wife without his approval. He pushes back with an attorney and says, no, I want nebulized budesonide for my wife. They comply. She's off the ventilator in 1 week. She's home with the family in 2 weeks. That happened before Thanksgiving. So this is a tool that can help with early disease, Oxford University, the Stoic trial, the principal trial, overwhelming success. They concluded 90% of hospitalizations, ER visits, and urgent care visits could be prevented with early treatment.
Gotcha.
With budesonide. But it also helps people with late disease. And I think that's about as extreme an example as you could have. Someone on 100% oxygen on the ventilator with a PEEPA 16 coming home in 2 weeks.
Now, Dr. Lee, this is Wade Wilkes. Let me ask you a question about, we hear a lot about ivermectin. Is it your experience that it's better than ivermectin after infection?
So this is not mutually exclusive. Ivermectin, budesonide, hydroxychloroquine, those are not mutually exclusive. There are no dangerous drug interactions. And so these medicines are, every patient needs to be treated as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor-patient relationship should be respected and protected. You don't, in China, I've been to China several times. I have a daughter that we adopted 25 years ago from China. In China, the state knows more about your health care than your personal physician that's taken care of you for 30 years. In China, the communist system, the socialist system, says you're going to do what the state tells you. They're going to use a broad brush. They're going to treat everybody the same way. And there is no patient rights. There is no protection of the doctor-physician relationship, or doctor-patient relationship. And this is not a communist state yet. We are not the USSA. We're not the United Socialist States of America. We are the United States of America. We have patient rights. The American Medical Association says that the doctors have the responsibility to tell every treatment option to the patient and the patient's family, the risk and benefit of every treatment option, and if someone has a financial benefit from any treatment option. And the hospitals, many of them are overseen by Joint Commission. They have to get certified by Joint Commission, is the organization. And Joint Commission says the hospitals have a responsibility to teach treatment, all the treatment options, have their staff be taught to teach the treatment options to the patients, just like the AMA Code of Medical Ethics for physicians. So there's the onus and the responsibility is on the hospitals and the doctors to tell the patients their treatment options and not to withhold life-saving medicine when there's a life-threatening disease going around. And certainly to keep them in the dark about treatment options. So, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, budesonide, a patient needs to be treated as an individual. At the NIH database, they say that 14.1% of patients in the hospital with COVID end up with venous thromboemboli, clots. What does that look like? A clot in the coronary artery is a heart attack. A clot in the cerebral artery is a stroke. A clot in the lungs is a pulmonary embolus. All of those are life-threatening conditions. So not only would you, if someone has COVID, should they receive inhaled budesonide as an option, but they need to be on aspirin or some kind of protection from clotting. They need to also be protected from the risk of a bacterial secondary pneumonia, which is also what will kill people with COVID. Not the COVID itself, but the bacterial pneumonia as a result of it. This is intuitive. This is common sense. Hundreds of years of medical care show that this is appropriate, that when someone has a viral respiratory illness, they're at increased risk for a bacterial pneumonia, and so you have to be proactive. This is not a disease to be reactive with, just like we shouldn't be reactive with other life-threatening conditions.
Yeah, 100% agree.
So you would use all those protocols at the same time or not? In other words, if I get the Delta variant, I took ivermectin back in, I think it was August or something, because I had people around me that were, you know, family members that had COVID-19. So I took it as a prophylactic situation. But if I come down with the Delta variant, use ivermectin, use what you're talking about as well at the same time, or what do you think?
Yes. So I can say that. That absolutely is a valid possibility. And so my treatment I'm saying that many patients are benefiting and recovering and staying out of the hospital with nebulized budesonide, aspirin, and antibiotics. I believe clarithromycin is an excellent choice because it covers the atypical bacteria, which would be Mycoplasma walking pneumonia bacteria, Legionnaire's disease, chlamydia pneumonia, and it also covers strep pneumonia bacteria that causes pneumonia. 86% of the time, it will respond. Strep pneumonia will be killed with clarithromycin. So you got to use a protocol, and you can add ivermectin. There's a doctor, Pierre Corey from Wisconsin, that's a critical care doctor who people can look it up, do the internet search, and find Pierre Corey talking to the United States Senate about ivermectin being used to treat COVID and to prevent COVID disease. Here's an interesting fact. Remember a couple months ago that we were being told by Dr. Fauci and all the other quote experts that there's a disaster happening in India, the numbers are going through the roof, it's out of control, everybody brace yourselves, it's going to come to the United States, it's going to be devastating what's happening there, and the numbers, and we were hearing about this explosion of COVID disease in India. A week later, we heard nothing else about it. Well, I got some of the printed material from Indian health departments recommending ivermectin and budesonide, and for prevention, hydroxychloroquine. That wasn't reported by Fauci and by the CNN and the other networks. And the numbers dropped like Mount Everest, dropped precipitously as far as hospitalizations, deaths. The exponential rise of deaths and hospitalizations was reversed. But we haven't heard about that.
So why do you think that is? Do you think it's because it's been so politicized? I mean, why would they do that at NIH and CDC not to report the truth on the fact that you're absolutely correct, doctor, and I believe you 100%, that we see this in Latin America, India, other places around the world. Why not here? And what is the big hang-up on just putting out the truth about these drugs that have been around forever?
Well, the question of whether information is being censored has been answered. We all know that Facebook.
Oh yeah, I'm banned currently. Yes.
Censoring. Yes. And so we know that a lot of useful information is being withheld. That First Amendment right is being challenged right now. You know, the First Amendment right was used to. Was used to protect pornography, but you can't use that to save lives, to have a debate about potentially life-saving treatments, especially when they've been proven by the oldest university in the English-speaking world, Oxford University, since 1096, with 72 Nobel Prize laureates, and you can't talk about that. That's dangerous. Dangerous to who? And so, you know, why they're doing it, I have my opinions, but whether they're doing that, there's no question that there's censorship and that there's definitely messaging that's going on. So, you know, when you watch a commercial on TV, you're watching TV, and a new medicine is out. At the end of the commercial, they talk real fast and they show fine print of all the potential complications that can happen with that medicine. The potential side effects. But you don't see that with the vaccines because they're immune from being, the companies that make the vaccines are immune from litigation. Therefore, they don't have the onus to do what would be really appropriate to tell people the risk. There's a risk and a benefit to every treatment option. There's a risk and benefit to every surgery, to every vaccination, to every medication. But you're not seeing a balanced message showing the risk and the benefits clearly to the public. Right now, we're getting commercials. We're getting messaging. We're getting propaganda. We're not getting the truth, a balanced truth. We're only being told, do this because we say so. That's communism. That's socialism. Do it because we say it. Your body, our choice.
And
your child's body.
And how do you quickly respond, Doctor? And I promise that would be my last question. I don't want to dominate the show. But how would you respond to Fauci, who was on one of the Sunday news programs yesterday, and he keeps repeating the same thing that gets repeated over and over again, is, well, if you take the vaccine and you do catch the Delta variant, because we know that the Delta variant has broken through and started to infect people who have been vaccinated, the symptoms won't be as severe, so you might as well go ahead and inject yourself with this foreign substance anyway. I mean, how do you respond to that?
Okay. He's so nonsensical. You know, he's the one that said to the public, to the American people, don't wear a mask. He said that. And then he said, wear a mask because, air quotes, we're in this, it's a symbol that we're in this together. And then he said, wear a mask. And then he said, wear two masks is an option. And then he said, if you get the shot, you need to wear, you don't have to wear the mask. And then he says, if you get the shot, you have to wear a mask. So who cares what he says at this point? He's the guy who said, so concerning the vaccine, you can look at Israel. You know, Fauci said that when we have 75 to 85% of the population get a vaccination, then the pandemic is over. That's our way out, back to normal. And so we can see our future. Let's go look at Israel. They have 85% vaccination rate. Who's in their hospitals? The majority of the people that are in the hospital and the people that are dying in Israel are the vaccinated. I saw one report. It was 4 out of 5 people in the hospital are vaccinated. And over there, they're starting to see, I heard that it was reported that the Pfizer vaccine is now being touted as 39% effective. Oh, 39%. Well, when I went to first grade, if I got a 39 on a paper, I got an F. If I got a 90, I got an A. 90% effective with inhaled budesonide, according to Oxford University, against COVID. But the vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine, that one report said 39% at this point, and that's being adjusted as we speak, down.
Yeah, I saw 17% out of Israel this week.
Yeah, it's going down. Eventually it'll be zero.
Yeah.
It'll be zero when we get all the numbers in, I'm convinced. Or maybe it'll be 1% or less than 1%. But the bottom line is the effectiveness of the vaccine is being – look at Gibraltar. That's an island that has 99% vaccination rate. And they're having hospitalizations and deaths skyrocket with 99% vaccination rate. Look at Iceland, where they have 90% vaccination rate. Guess who's in the hospital and guess who's dying from COVID right now? The vaccinated. So we can look a little bit farther than CNN for our information. We can look farther than the United States for our information. But the good news is we're not helpless, we're not hopeless. For some people, this can be a dangerous, life-threatening disease. The good news is we have treatments that work. Now there's evidence, overwhelming evidence, mountains of evidence, that there are medications that are effective, and they should be used in combination. Absolutely, don't treat just one aspect of the disease. You treat every aspect. You protect from clotting, you protect from secondary bacterial pneumonia, and you take care of the disease process with the cytokine storm. The thing about budesonide is it's targeted steroids right to the lung tissue. The reason Spain, Italy, France, Oxford University, Australia, Iran studied inhaled budesonide against COVID is because it's targeted therapy that doesn't have the risk of systemic steroids. Total body steroids, which is the term for if you take steroids by mouth or as an injection in the muscle or IV, then you have the risk that's associated with corticosteroids of decreasing the bone density, decreasing the muscle mass, turning down the body's ability to fight infection, turning down the immune system, and decreasing the ability to heal. All of those things are guaranteed to be pushed that direction when you use systemic steroids. But you don't get a bioavailability that has the same risk when you use inhaled steroids, a targeted approach. And this medicine is so safe, it's been used on 2-pound preemie babies in the NICU for over 25 years and on the fragile elderly in nursing homes. It's never been in the news for causing a disaster for 25-plus years because it is safe. But as far as effectiveness, I've never seen a medicine more effective at taking care
of the acute disease process than nebulized budesonide. And so there are many tools that we can use, and you should use all tools that are appropriate for the patient. You look at the risk-benefit ratio, and you make a treatment strategy. That's what Dr. Ben Edwards does, patient by patient. Everybody's treated as an individual, and some people need to be treated more aggressively than others. It depends on the patient and the circumstances. But that's not what we're getting from our government authorities right now. We're being told everybody should be treated the same. Minimal care, late care only has been the focus for the first half of the pandemic at least. And still people are being told to go home and tough it out with Tylenol. That's unethical because we're supposed to, according to the Hippocratic Oath, number one, do no harm. Number two, alleviate human suffering. It's not about just saving lives. Yeah, maybe you'll have a heart attack and you'll survive it. Is that called success? How about not only do you survive it, but you're not debilitated afterwards? How about we alleviate your suffering as you're fighting the disease? That is not even being discussed because they don't want you to look that direction. There's an agenda. It's very clear to me that after having Facebook, Instagram, YouTube censor me when I'm giving life-saving information at my own risk to my license, that there's an agenda to keep the public from hearing life-saving, potentially life-saving information for them and their loved ones. And but that's not going to stop me. So I've had two complaints turned into the medical board against me for sharing life-saving information. Both of them were proven frivolous, valid, inappropriate, and dismissed summarily. So just because someone turns in a complaint doesn't mean it's valid. And right now there's an attempt to silence the message that there is life-saving treatment strategies for COVID. Early outpatient treatment works. And who is listening to me? Well, I've had some one-on-one encounters with Ken Paxton. Last week had an hour one-on-one meeting with Louis Gohmert, the U.S. Congressman from Tyler, flew in to talk to me for an hour. And so there are people that are thinkers that are listening. There are many heroes out there that are speaking common sense, like Dr. Rand Paul, who said, "Hey, I got the I already got the disease. I have antibodies. I have a functioning immune system. I don't need to get the shot." And you know what? Washington University School of Medicine has been drawing blood on patients for over a year now, and they're showing that patients who recover from mild cases of COVID have high levels of antibodies to COVID. What a revelation that the immune system still functions like the immune system did before January 1, 2020. That's not what Anthony Fauci says. Remember, he said that if you had COVID, you're probably only protected for 3 months. I said in an interview that he pulled that out of thin air. Other people said that he pulled it out of somewhere else. But it doesn't line up with reality. Washington University says you have lasting, durable immunity, natural immunity, if you recover from a disease. Consider this fact. We've been giving vaccinations for 40 years, 50 years now, measles, mumps, rubella, pertussis, and we're not blaming the unvaccinated for a outbreak right now of measles, mumps, rubella, COVID, of pertussis, because of the unvaccinated. We're not putting out that messaging because there is no outbreak. That's not how it works. And yet that ridiculous, nonsensical, non-scientific argument is being made by Fauci and others that the unvaccinated are a risk to the vaccinated here, causing this epidemic. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that are nonsensical being said by Fauci and others that have been proven wrong by science. And I appreciate Dr. Ben Edwards being a light of information there in Lubbock and in the region, telling the facts, sticking to science. Thank you, Dr. Edwards.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you, Dr. Bartlett. It does take some courage to stand out there and be a voice when it seems like you're somewhat in the minority. When we get back, we'll take a quick break, but there's a few more minutes so in the show. After that, we can talk about this vaccine mandate by employers. I'm glad you touched on the natural immunity because I wanted to get to that too. Our natural immunity is amazing. The folks that had SARS-CoV-1 18, 19 years ago, they were tested. They still had immunity 17 years later. Also, maybe we'll have time to get to Robert Malone. Dr. Robert Malone invented the mRNA technology, and he said worst-case scenario is antibody-dependent enhancement is going to occur because of these vaccines that we're putting out. And he was quoted the other day saying he's concerned with the early data coming out that's maybe what's showing up now. Because when you vaccinate with mRNA vaccines in the middle of a pandemic, you can pressure the virus to replicate at a higher level in these vaccinated folks. But we'll get into some of these things when we get back. Dr. Richard Bartlett with us today on You're the Cure. Stick with us. We'll be back in 5 minutes.
Welcome back to You're the Cure right here on AM 580, 95.9 FM. You're the Cure, brought to you by VeritasMedical.com. Check out past archive programs, other important information to help you regain control of your health. That's VeritasMedical, all one word, .com. Check it out there today.
All right, we're back at it with Dr. Richard Bartlett, ER physician here out here in West Texas. Real quick, I want to run through some headlines. We've kind of hit this hard, but I want to just wrap this part up, and then we'll go to the vaccine. CDC, this is end of April, 10,262 breakthrough cases as of April 30th, 2021. And then the CDC said right after that, we're going to stop tracking these breakthrough cases. 25% of cases in Los Angeles fully vaccinated. That's from the New York Post. HMS Queen Elizabeth, a Navy ship for Great Britain, 100 sailors test positive after the entire ship was vaccinated. CDC study shows 74% of the people infected in Massachusetts COVID outbreak were fully vaccinated. Out in California, the most highly vaccinated counties are seeing a surge in COVID-19 cases. 49 fully vaccinated New Jersey residents have died from COVID-19. That was from a few weeks back. Here's Israel. Majority of hospitalized COVID-19 patients are fully vaccinated. That's an Israeli doctor. He's saying 95% of these severe patients are vaccinated. 85 to 90% of the hospitalizations are in fully vaccinated people. England, public health, England, PHE, came out and said 17% effectiveness now in 50-year-olds and older. The COVID-19 vaccine is now just 17% effective. Vaccinated people in Singapore make up 75% of the COVID-19 cases. Iceland, Dr. Bartlett already mentioned Iceland. The vast majority are vaccinated who are hospitalized. Australia, this was a press conference being held in one of the provinces in Australia. 141 people were in the hospital, and 140 of those 141 fully vaccinated. And then here's an article from August the 9th from the Daily Exposé. Fully vaccinated have, this is out of Great Britain, fully vaccinated people have a 990% higher chance of death due to COVID-19 than people who are unvaccinated. That's according to the latest Public Health England data. And then pausetothink.org put out an article with Israel, United Emirates, and UK. And these are graphs that show when the vaccination started and this huge spike in COVID cases in all three of these countries. And there's other countries like Uruguay and Hungary, and they do a great job. John Hopkins put out a study, the top 13 most vaccinated countries have the most infections. So the data is pretty overwhelming. I had a text from a doctor in Florida. His granddaughter works in the ICU, and she said it's about 50-50 of their ICU patients vaccinated, unvaccinated. However, the hospital spokesman was saying that it was 99% vaccinated. Had another colleague in Amarillo reach out, respiratory technician from the hospital, said basically the same thing. It's about 50-50, vax and unvax, but the hospital reps were saying it's all unvaccinated that are in the ICU. Had a third colleague from California saying the same thing. I have a colleague who's an urgent care doctor out in California, and his most severe cases are in the vaccinated. So at the very minimum, there's a huge question on not just the effectiveness, but does it actually enhance your chances of having severe infection and ending up in the ICU? And a big issue and a big problem is the control group got eliminated from the initial studies that were touted as 95% effective. Well, the absolute risk reduction was less than 1%. So as Dr. Bartlett said prior to the break, we'll probably see the vaccine effectiveness get down to about 1%. Well, that's what the original study showed, the absolute risk reduction. What they touted to you, 95%, was relative risk reduction. I don't have time to go into that. But the control group, they've all been vaccinated. So we've completely lost the control group, and I think that's why they're probably pushing, let's get everyone vaccinated, including kids, which to me is criminal, because they don't want they don't want a control group. They don't want a significant portion of the population a year from now, 2, 5, 10 years from now, to be the control group. But we've lost the control group from the original study. Autopsy report, this is out of Germany. I've seen some autopsy reports from the U.S. also, but a German pathologist, Dr. Schiermacher, has performed 40 autopsies on patients that have died within 2 weeks of the vaccine. He said 40% of them can be directly attributed to the vaccine. There's a whistleblower that came out from CDC and said 45,000 deaths from the vaccine within 3 days. People that have had the vaccine, within 3 days, they're dead. There's 45,000. And if you push that out to 2 weeks, it's going to be even more. This German pathologist came out because he was saying we need to shift our funding to autopsies. We need to be doing autopsies on not just 2 weeks out, but probably even a month out. And let's do them on everybody, because he's seeing a 40% death rate in vaccinated patients that he's seen that died within 2 weeks. So just so many huge red flags and huge question marks. And the fact we're even mentioning that kids would get this. I mean, how many kids have we seen die from heart attacks, blood clots in the brain, myocarditis? That's a permanent long-term scar to your heart tissue. Why would any child, even if it's just whatever small percentage, not even one kid. Now, Hopkins came out and said there wasn't a single healthy kid that died from COVID-19 that didn't have an underlying medical condition. So if there's zero risk from the infection, why does any child get asked to be a part of this experiment when there is absolute risk? Kids have died. 17-year-olds, 16-year-olds, 15-year-old kids have died from this. Unbelievable. I saw a recruitment article, an ad, recruiting kids down in Austin, Texas, down to 6 years old, trying to entice these kids. It is unbelievable. Now, employers are mandating this. Baylor Scott & White was in the news big time last week, and I think their employees need to give them an answer by this week. United Airlines has come out and said, you know, we're going to mandate everybody. There's pilots who are now reaching out to attorneys, and it's the attorneys, unfortunately, I think that it's time for them to step up, and some are, and get these cases going in the court system, because doctors like myself and Dr. Bartlett, Dr. McCullough, and others have been preaching this for 18 months now, and of course the media censorship's keeping most of the public in the dark. So it's going to have to take attorneys suing these folks, media companies, and hospital systems. Dr. Bartlett, what say you on the vaccine and these employer mandates to get a vaccine, which, by the way, I just have to say, sorry I keep going on here, as we mentioned before, natural immunity is more robust. You don't just make an antibody to just a piece of the spike protein. You're making antibodies to the whole virus, all the different pieces and parts, and the T cells with the memory T cells, and you have this huge robust memory that's probably going to be lifetime. Just like people who get measles naturally, they have a lifetime immunity. Probably that's what it's going to be. We know for sure 17 years is what SARS-CoV-1. Why in the world, at the minimum, is Baylor Scott & White not screening for people that have had the natural infection? Because we know they're at a 2 to 3 to even 4-fold increased risk of adverse events, a side effect of the vaccine, a bad outcome from the vaccine, if you've already had COVID naturally. And you have zero risk. Someone could cough in your face with the Delta variant if you've already had COVID. You're not going to get COVID again, almost 99.9% chance of not getting COVID again. You have great immunity when you've recovered naturally. So this vaccine mandate makes no sense, as much sense as wearing a mask and social distancing and all the other things that failed, had no science behind them. We're going through the exact same thing now. Dr. Bartlett comments on this employer mandate or the vaccines in general.
Oh, my. Well, you know, there's two strategies for dealing with this COVID pandemic. One strategy was actually hatched in a communist country, and that included vaccines. It included mass mandates, social distancing, locking down cities, and that was in communist China. How did it go there in the beginning? It didn't do very well. And then it went to Italy, 30,000 deaths within weeks. then Spain, 30,000 deaths within weeks, and France, 30,000 deaths within weeks, then New York City, 30,000 deaths within weeks. That was the result of that strategy. But there's another strategy, which is early outpatient treatment and using medications that have been proven by science to be effective. That's another strategy. But we were told from the beginning the only strategy is social distancing, masks, and wait for a vaccine. And then just to summarize what you just said, when you look at Iceland with 90% vaccination rate, when you look at Israel with 85% vaccination rate, when you look at Gibraltar with 99% vaccination rate, the people that are dying and the people that are hospitalized and the positive cases are by far the majority are vaccinated. And so the idea that if you're vaccinated, you're not going to be in the hospital, the idea that you won't die from COVID and Delta variant if you've been vaccinated has been proven wrong in Gibraltar, Iceland, and Israel, the most vaccinated nations in the world. And so that's a fantasy that's being promoted right now. If you look worldwide, the evidence is there. And why are we getting different numbers from elected officials, from politicians, from hospital spokesmen, different numbers are being quoted than the people that actually are boots on the ground, doctors and respiratory therapists in the hospitals seeing the patients. So there's different messaging out there. You got to be careful who you listen to. I don't know. You probably saw the slide that was part of the FDA Center for Biologics Evaluation and Research, and that slide said a list of possible adverse event outcomes, and it's subject to change. But it included Guillain-Barré syndrome. That's ascending paralysis. This is the risk with the vaccines. Guillain-Barré syndrome, transverse myelitis, acute disseminated encephalomyelitis, encephalitis, myelitis, meningoencephalitis, meningitis, encephalopathy, convulsion, seizure, stroke, narcolepsy and cataplexy, deaths, pregnancy and birth outcomes, other acute demyelinating diseases, thrombocytopenia, disseminated intravascular coagulation, non-anaphylactic allergic reactions, anaphylaxis, venous thromboembolism, arthritis, arthropathy, Kawasaki disease, multisystem inflammatory syndrome in children, vaccine-enhanced disease, which is what you just mentioned, where the vaccine actually sets you up to be sicker. That was all listed on the FDA slideshow from the Center of Biologics Evaluation and Research. I have that slide. And I'll send that to you, Ben, if you haven't seen it. I've seen some of these problems as an ER doctor. I had a 61-year-old patient in Lubbock who went to the pharmacy, got the shot, nearly passed out. The pharmacist tells her, quote, "I wish I would not have given you that shot, that vaccine." And then she goes home. She wakes up with the worst headache she's ever had. She comes in as an emergency patient to the emergency room I'm working at. And she can't feel anything from the top of her head to the bottom of her feet on the left side of her body. She has a motor deficit on the left side. She can't make a grip with her left hand. She can't move her left arm. That's not normal. The reason she did it was her in-laws would not come and visit the family if she didn't get the vaccine. She had none of those problems until she got the shot. And then I had another patient in Lubbock who received the shot, an elderly lady. She goes home. A couple hours later, she tries to stand up. Her legs won't work. She has transverse myelitis. She's paralyzed. She falls flat on her face. She's already on a blood thinner. So now I got to get a CAT scan to see if she's got a bleed in the brain because she's having trouble as a result of the fall. I've seen college student, 18-year-old, healthy, no pre-existing condition, get the shot, a college student at Tech, and immediately after the shot, she's dizzy, lightheaded, feels like she's going to pass out, can't function. It's not only affected her ability to go to school, it's affected her comfort and her ability to function, period. She shouldn't be driving a car. The shot was 4 days before. She comes in the ER, and she's still having trouble as a result of the shot. A fella who I saw this weekend in the ER again, who came into the emergency room 6 months ago, and he was short of breath. When we checked his oxygen, he was very hypoxic, and we had to put him on supplemental oxygen before he could even give us his history. And 2 weeks before, he had received the first vaccine shot, and then that triggered the shortness of breath that he had never had before. And so I see him 6 months later. Now he's a pulmonary cripple. He does landscaping for a living. Can you imagine for the rest of your life, you're a hard worker, you have a strong work ethic, and your life has been destroyed because you complied with what the government mandate is pushing right now. And so I'm seeing real people, real names, real life experiences of these complications as a result of the COVID vaccine shots in the ER. And for these people and their families, it is life-changing. And those aren't even the people that are dying immediately. And so are people dying if they get the COVID vaccine? Most people are not initially. But some people are, and that's not – I haven't seen that in CNN. I haven't seen that at CBS, NBC, ABC. I haven't seen that at Fox, that the amount of people that are dying. Although they may be covering it, I think this is astounding. When they did the swine flu vaccine and 53 people died, they pulled the vaccine. 53 people dying was enough to use common sense and to protect the public. But we've had other vaccines, and that's a vaccine that went through all of the FDA testing and was not an emergency use authorization. The swine flu vaccine was a vaccine that was fully vetted by the FDA and had to be withdrawn. So just because something is fully vetted by the FDA doesn't mean that it can't be withdrawn because it's a danger to the public. That has already happened over and over with several vaccines that the FDA has approved. There's been medicines that the FDA has approved that have had to be withdrawn later because we found evidence that it was killing people. Vioxx is an example. There's many medications, and there are several vaccines that have been fully vetted by the FDA that have been withdrawn. Just because the FDA gives their stamp of approval doesn't mean that's the end of the story, unfortunately. So those are some of my thoughts.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said earlier, there's 12,000 roughly on VAERS that have been reported dead in America. The whistleblower said 45,000 have died within 3 days of the vaccine. Thomas Rentz is an attorney for the American Frontline Doctors, and he's bringing lawsuits. But he said he's not allowed or can't release the data yet, but he said it's probably going to be more like 150,000 deaths. And this is the acute. This is like in the immediate term, a few days, week, 2 weeks, whatever. All the studies on these coronavirus vaccines historically, after the first SARS outbreak 20 years ago, they tried to make these vaccines. And every time the animal studies showed this immune enhancement. So when the animals that did, they made robust antibody responses after the vaccine, but then they got re-exposed to coronaviruses later, and they had this overwhelming, exaggerated immune response. We call it antibody-dependent enhancement. That's what Dr. Malone's talking about, warning about. Other doctors have warned about it too, but he's the guy that invented the mRNA vaccine, so when he says it, we probably ought to listen. And he's saying he thinks he's seeing the first signs of that is happening right now. So this antibody-dependent enhancement we haven't even really gotten into. We're just talking about the immediate reaction to the shot and all these blood clots that are being formed. So there's a lot to consider. I want to encourage the employees that are being mandated out there, especially if you've already had COVID. There's absolutely no reason to get the vaccine. You're at increased risk for adverse reactions and zero risk for getting COVID again. So for sure, you don't need it. But if you're under 30, you're just in general. Even without treatment, the numbers show it's practically 0% odds of dying. And we've talked about all the treatment on the first half of the show. 90% improved outcomes with budesonide, the inhaled steroid, the ivermectin, the hydroxychloroquine, the combination of all these things. You need to have an ability to have medical freedom and not be forced to sign up for an experimental authorized under an emergency, which we don't have time, we've got to wrap it up, but there should not even be an emergency authorization. By law, by definition, you can't have one if there's an effective treatment. I mean, my 8-year-old kids could figure out, Dad, you know, maybe that's why they're not telling ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and budesonide are effective treatments, because the emergency authorization would be pulled and the vaccine program would be done. Oh, so much to go through here. But back to the employees. What seems to be most effective, I've talked to some of these attorneys, is religious exemption. You will have a very legitimate chance to win a lawsuit against your employer if you submit a genuine religious exemption. If you don't believe that you should be manipulating your God-given immune system or genetically modifying your God-given immune system, if you believe children, unborn children in particular, shouldn't be used in any part of the research and development of and production of the vaccines, that's a belief. You just write your conviction. Write your heartfelt, you know, from your heart conviction, not that you just attend some church, not that. Write it from your own personal conviction, and that should be upheld. So be encouraged, guys. We will get through this. In the end, the truth always wins. We know who wins in the very end, too. This really is a propaganda issue. It really is. Follow the money, follow the money. I mean, Dr. Bartlett, you said $800 billion was a projected vaccine profits.
I saw a report of $870 billion at the very beginning of this pandemic was was the potential money that could be made off of this vaccine initiative. And so that was just one report early. Who knows what the hard numbers are now? I'll tell you, Pfizer knows, Moderna knows. I remember a report coming out that the Pfizer CEO had not received the vaccine yet, and that was about 6 months into this pandemic. I'm like, what does he know that he's not telling us?
Yeah. Well, it came out the other day he couldn't travel because he still hasn't gotten it. And I mean, this was last week.
You think he might not know that he can go to a pharmacy on the corner and get it?
Yeah, maybe he's too busy developing the Delta variant vaccine to go get his own. Who knows?
There's so much evidence that you don't have to think very hard to say something is wrong when we can make it through the H1N1 pandemic of a life-threatening, deadly, highly contagious respiratory infection without one vaccine being created or mandated.
Yeah, follow the money, follow the money. Fauci's financially vested. CDC holds patents on vaccines, not these, but other ones. I mean, it's always money, money, money. And I want to remind people, we're giving the benefit of the doubt in a non-FDA-approved, still in phase 3 trial right now. We're giving the benefit of the doubt to Pfizer, who has paid out the biggest fine in U.S. history, $2.3 billion, and that was part of a plea deal. Because they misbranded Bextra, and then they bought off doctors, the kickbacks to the doctors. $2.3 billion, they're the largest criminal in U.S. history. And that's not the only time. In the 90s, they paid out $10.75 million in one settlement, $60 million in another lawsuit on Rezulin, $90 million in the U.K. Pfizer had to pay in fines, $430 million in 2004 to settle criminal charges for bribing doctors, 2011, racketeering, $142.1 million settlement in 2012, a $45 million settlement to the U.S. Security and Exchange Commission for bribing overseas doctors. Nigerian children used as human guinea pigs by Pfizer, a U.S. federal court fined them $79 million. This is unbelievable.
I don't want to hear the facts. Ben, that's confusing me. It's so much easier just to believe what I hear on the commercials for the COVID shot.
Yeah. Well, when you put fear into the society, then they start looking for someone to give them the answer to help that fear. And so here you go. And going and finding the facts and the truth, that takes a little more effort and courage, and it's hard. I mean, these are hard things to come up against and to stand for that truth when your neighbors or family or whoever, half your church, whatever. I mean, it's such a political, divisive thing. And to me, this is the spirit of the Antichrist. If Christ came that we could be one as he and God are one, it says in Scripture, then the spirit of the Antichrist is going to be about division. Let's divide on race, sex, any which way you want to divide things, even religion. But let's divide on vax versus unvax. I mean, it's just division, division, division. And we got to rise above that, look at things from a spiritual point of view, see what this really is, see where our peace really comes from, which is from a person. And it's not Fauci. It's Jesus Christ. That's where true peace, not this false sense of peace that you get 5 minutes after your vaccine, but then, you know, a few weeks later, oh, it's breakthrough cases. But we got to wrap it up here. Wade's got to go on to his next show, I'm pretty sure. And I'm getting on my soapbox. So Dr. Bartlett, Richard Bartlett, thank you so much for what you're doing, for standing for truth, for not backing down, for not being intimidated. When your medical license gets threatened, your reputation gets put on the line, you still stand for the truth. So thank you for being who you are and being a light out there in the ER out here in West Texas.
Well, God bless you, Ben, and God bless Texas.
Amen.
Thank you, Doctor. Appreciate that so much. You've been listening to You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. That's veritasmedical.com for archived programs and other important information to help you regain control of your health. veritasmedical.com. See you back here next Monday with You're the Cure.